Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Richard. And lovely to see you about all those changes. For those of you who don't know me, my name's Paul Winch, and I'm a grad of UTS, and I help with Credo particularly. We have some alumni who help, and so I help make sure that they are working in partnership with the student leadership, since we're a student society. Okay, let me begin. Since the world, as we all know, has so many deep problems and just we can't seem to fix them, and the answers to fix them all seem so contradictory, I think that means that a common part of our daily experience is to desperately want to know that we ourselves, personally, are okay. If only we could know that we're okay, sure, that wouldn't fix all the problems, but it would help to justify me, to validate my existence within the mess. Now, by okay, I don't mean not have any issues, but more personally okay in a way that, you know, we have an assurance within ourselves that we measure up okay, we're all right. Even by some limited standards that we're above the line or on the correct side or on a better pathway. It's freeing to know that we might be more part of the solution in the world than contributors to the mess. But where is that line of okay? And what are valid signs that, you know, I'm above it? In such a broken world, I think even small measures, small measurable indicators that we're okay can give us a lot of relief, a freedom. I think it's freeing to know that we might be making more of a difference than more of a negative contribution. I understand, for example, the appeal of veganism, partly for this reason, because not only might it be a tangible way of contributing to solutions, yes, I know it's contested, blah, 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 but it's also really clear, isn't it, whether you're observant or not. I mean, it's a very small standard, but it can give you a lot of assurance because it's so clear. I've been getting a lot of these type of ads in my Facebook scroll recently. I don't know, maybe it knows my age or something. This kind of measure of okayness is another common appealing one in our culture, which trades on aesthetic appeal and where visual imagery is so prevalent. It's a major currency in our culture. So a sculpted body, or at least a well-adorned one, is another way to some soul liberation in a dark world. Again, there's some gauges to tell how you're going. You know, percentage of body fat, for example. And you kind of think, that's so small. But, you know, if we're healthy, attractive, and energetic, surely that's just a limited good in a bad, bad world. Right? I mean, even the tiniest sliver of light in a dark room makes a massive difference. So get above the line. Be okay. And religion can carry this same kind of appeal to liberation in a confusing world. There are often clear indicators in religion if you're on the right path. You can more easily know if you're okay or making progress. And who, again, doesn't want that kind of freedom within our souls? Well, we kind of go, is that the freedom that Jesus offers when he proclaimed this most famous thing, the truth will set you free? Is that what he's talking about? Listen to how Paul, the apostle of Jesus, explains it in his letter to the Galatians from chapter 5. So it's the next section down that Matt read. Look at that first sentence. It is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again by a yoke of slavery. So in three ways, in just this first little bit, it's telling us that Jesus wants us to be free. Firstly, there's the bold statement, Christ has set us free. That's emphatic. Paul's saying it's a situational fact. It's a victory that he has objectively achieved. Christ has set us free. Secondly, there's an explanation of why Christ has done this. And what's the explanation? Well, it's for freedom that Christ has set us free. The purpose why Jesus has set us free is for freedom. So there's a situational fact fixed. There's this experience of the fact, a kind of a psychological freedom. And then thirdly, there's a warning to stand firm in this freedom. Don't be enslaved again. Now, three ways in which Jesus wants us, is stated that Jesus wants us to be free. And this could be a little surprising. If you're here learning about Christianity, maybe freedom is one of the attractions for you in it. Or if you're a Christian, does being free matter to you? Does freedom characterize you? Because it's for freedom that Jesus has set us free. He wants you to be free. Do you resist slavery in your experience? But now Paul goes on in a really obscure direction. And as I read the next two paragraphs, follow along and maybe even circle what you think the key issue is. What's the repeated thing, or what's most on Paul's mind here? From verse 2, mark my words, I, Paul, tell you that if you let yourselves be circumcised, Christ will be of no value to you at all. Again, I declare to every man who lets himself be circumcised that he is obligated to obey the whole law. You who are trying to be justified by the law have been alienated from Christ. You've fallen away from grace. For through the Spirit we eagerly await by faith the righteousness for which we hope. For in Christ Jesus neither circumcision nor uncircumcision has any value. The only thing that counts is faith expressing itself through love. You were running a good race. Who's cutting on you to keep you from obeying the truth? That kind of persuasion does not come from the one who calls you. Quote, a little yeast works through the whole batch of dough, end quote. I am confident in the Lord that you will take no other view. The one who's throwing you into confusion, whoever that may be, will have to pay the penalty. Brothers and sisters, if I'm still preaching circumcision, why am I still being persecuted? In that case, the offense of the cross has been abolished. But as for those agitators, I wish they'd go the whole way and emasculate themselves. Okay, so here's the logic. Paul says emphatically that Jesus offers freedom, verse 1, and then for two paragraphs he speaks a whole lot about circumcision. They seem completely unrelated to me. But here's the thing, these two paragraphs are the extended warning part. You see, he said, don't be enslaved again. This is the warning. Circumcision would be a yoke of slavery. Now, let's work this out. Because circumcision, it's just a small surgical procedure for males to remove some excess skin, okay, off the end of the penis. Now, while it's not a hugely common in our country and time, it was for Jewish boy babies, both in Paul's time and now, as well as practiced in some other cultures. Here is a recent photo of a roadside billboard. It's in a southern African country advocating circumcision. Now, we might find that strange, but probably no more baffling than they would find receiving a vegan pamphlet on a CBD street here. And let me say that male circumcision is nothing, absolutely nothing, on the kind of body modifications and enhancements to get the right physical proportions and image that people have in their surgical makeovers here. But Paul is still against circumcision because those he was writing to, it was being promoted for religious reasons to get above the line, to know that you're okay. You can see in verse 3 and 4, look at those, he connects it to the law, by which he is referring to the Old Testament law, the moral and ceremonial laws given to the Jews through the prophet Moses. In other words, this is a religious equivalent to finding a way to know that you're above the line, that you're doing okay in our dark and messed up world, that you're going to be contributing more positively than negatively. And some people have come to these non-Jewish Christians and are saying, look, you know, if you want the freedom of knowing that you're genuinely okay, then the blokes amongst you at least should get circumcised. Because Jesus was a Jew. Paul was a Jew. They were circumcised. And apart from that, there's the case of it being so obvious and clear. It's like becoming vegan or getting buff. Sure, there's some costs involved, but it's easy to know if you're on the right path, isn't it? Because, think about this, but don't think too hard. If you've had a really crappy day, you know, regardless of the other stuff-ups that you might have to edge you below the line, it's still okay because every time you bathe or toilet, there's a reminder of your religious commitments marked in your flesh. Your existence is still vindicated. So, seek to be justified by the law. Get circumcised. It's not a big deal. Then you'll know that you're on the right path. So why is Paul so against this kind of freedom? This kind of self-validating, self-accrediting freedom to know that you're above the line, including through religious circumcision? Well, because it's really a yoke of slavery, that's why. It's absolute burden of tyranny to pursue this kind of life. A few arguments. The first two are actually very similar with all the non-religious self-justifications that people seek for themselves in our dark and messed up world. You know, whether they're holding the correct political view or choosing good lifestyle choices, or even the comfort of measuring up, you know, to the visual image of some physical ideal. So the first deficiency of these routes to becoming free is this. What on earth gives you the ability to imagine that you can set the okay line where you do, so that you can inevitably meet it? Because that's what everyone does, right? They go, well, I'm close. Verse 3, don't forget that every man who lets himself be circumcised is obligated to obey the entire law. Of course that's the way it works. All kind of attainment scales do that. There's the first step, but then you've got to go on, right? Why do people forget about that? If you do the first bit, then you're obligated to keep going. I mean, circumcision is just like putting the key in the ignition. After that, you have to turn it. Then you have to put the gear in. Then you have to hold the steering wheel. Then you have to press the accelerator. Then you have to wash the car. Then you have to service the car. Why do you put the line so low as just to put the key in the ignition? That's because you can meet it, right? Because you can meet that one. There's always more in religion, ceremonies to perform or morals to attain, in other scales. You've just got to go on. I mean, you've got to get rid of all your leather out of your room if you're a vegan. You know, you've just got to keep going. whatever measure you are using as your standard. So isn't it a bit strange that you tend to be able to meet the okay line pretty easy? Or find ready excuses for yourself if you don't, when in reality there's way more to do? You know, I could have been an honest student. Well, except that, you know, for this and that problem, and this lecture was terrible, and, you know. So, you know, it's okay still. I'm intelligent enough, more than most, in fact. This is tyranny, isn't it? You've probably heard of the illusory superiority phenomenon. You heard of the illusory superiority phenomenon? It's where everyone rates themselves as way above average in their chosen thing. Okay, so 94% of professors rate themselves as better academics than all the other professors. That's the illusory superiority phenomenon. What's more, if you do come unstuck, here's the other tyranny of this system. There's always a different measure suitable for you. Heck, you know, if that didn't work out, I'll rate myself on this comparison. And so people just have these arbitrary measures, don't they? Some people, it's how they hold a drink that makes them okay. How many social media followers they have give them a satisfactory level of vindication. So, first argument, why this is tyranny, it's self-delusion, it's arbitrary measures, that's the first problem. Are you trapped in the illusory superiority phenomenon? Paul highlights another problem in the second paragraph. Before I point you to it though, I'm going to tell you a story. Many years ago, I was stuck in the illusory superiority phenomenon. Because I decided to get completely clean in my eating. You know about that? And I was good. I was okay. You know, doing like the organic shopping and stuff like that. So I went away for holidays with some close friends and we had a great time. Well, I did. Because towards the end, they actually said that I'd spoil their holiday because every meal I'd been given a running commentary on what they were eating and making subtle suggestions for improvements and comparisons. And they said, that was horrible. It came as a complete shock to me. I had no idea that I'd been doing this for 4 days. I'd not even been aware. And this highlights the second deficiency with these routes to becoming free. How you relate to those who measure differently on your standard line of okayness easily becomes twisted. If physical allure is your standard measure and you rate well, then you're going to easily diss those more plain, even without realizing probably. And of course, the opposite is true. If your appearance doesn't meet current social beauty norms, and that's your kind of line, well, that's devastating, isn't it? This week, the new Vertigo came out, and there's a great article in here. The first time I felt fat. I mean, the fat shaming. It started at 5 for this person. You can see these distortions happening in that last paragraph printed in Galatians 5. Paul says that they're being thrown into disarray. Well, of course they are. They've been told that they're religiously inadequate. They haven't attained the correct line yet. That there's more power ahead for them. If only they did this. If only you were good enough to do this. If only you were sensible to do that. They're being confused. And even Paul himself is being persecuted by them, he says. That is how extreme this kind of measuring up to kind of external performance standards can become. that you want to manipulate or coerce or pressure or force your attainments or expectations onto others. Even punish them when they don't get with the program. Well, here, thirdly, is the biggest problem Paul has with this kind of self-accrediting, self-adjudicating personal validations, including religious attainment. Not only do they tend towards being arbitrary and delusional, not only do they mess up other people, sometimes unknowingly, but they're just plain unnecessary. In Jesus, there's a completely different way to know that you're okay in this messed up world. And this is the wonder of freedom in Christ, is that it operates differently. It comes to you as a gift. It comes to you as a gift rather than something that you attain yourself. The achievement has been accomplished for you through a worthy representative, Jesus, doing it on your behalf. So that means you receive it rather than achieve it. It's an open hand of reception rather than a mighty arm of achievement. This is why it's completely different. Paul describes it in that section that Matt read for us as no longer living yourself, but Christ living in you. That means no longer striving for self-validation because, well, it says he loved you and gave himself for you. No longer alive to the law, whether that be a religious and moral law or any other merited measures that you kind of latch onto, even arbitrary ones. As a Christian, you've died to that. It's irrelevant. Why? So that you can simply live for God only. Not live for self-validation. And that's radically different, isn't it? That's radical freedom. No longer tyrannized by various measures which you may or may not compare well with. Verse 6, for in Christ Jesus neither circumcision nor uncircumcision has any value. He's saying religion or irreligion are not the measures. You know, schmick body with clean lines, not so schmick body, massively productive person who's, you know, functional and contributors to society, housebound person with sickness. All of that is irrelevant in Christ, in Christ's way to freedom. If Christ has set you free, then live out that freedom. Don't be enslaved again by whatever scales we desperately want to measure ourselves against for that sense of inner certainty. But this is so different, so counter to how we normally justify our existence. And here's one reason why it's hard. Because the clarity of the indicators are not there. Paul says that the only thing that counts with the Christ way to freedom is faith, working itself out through love. And that's absolutely real, I would say, but it's way less tangible, isn't it? I mean, I can't show you a scan of my soul that shows you that I've entrusted myself to Jesus and his work for me. And while it's way less tangible, but there are some telltale signs, though. Look at verse 5. Through the Spirit, we eagerly await by faith the righteousness for which we hope. Again, this is just a different way of talking about right. Righteousness is being in the right. You're above the line. And this says that when you trust in Jesus, his Spirit within you enables you, what? Just to wait. Just to wait for the public vindication that we desperately want in a broken world. So here's some telltale signs that might be examples. Do you know a Christian who's been shamed, but they haven't fought to preserve their honor as much as you might normally expect? That's a demonstration, you see, of this new reality, this freedom in Christ, their trust in Christ, representing in Christ representing them. And one day he will grant them the gift of righteousness for which they hope. So they don't have to fight for it now. Here's another. Have you experienced a Christian just apologizing, maybe even quite surprisingly, quite freely for their mistakes, for their forgetfulness? Not just kind of brushing it off with a lol or something. You know, I'm really sorry I did that. That again is likely an outworking of this freedom in Christ, because their justification is a gift from Christ. It's not something that they've had to earn, and so therefore it's not something that they have to self-fight for, to maintain. They can apologize. The Christian who is sad but not gutted by an unexpectedly bad mark. Again, that can be an outworking of having their hope in a better future than even the university medal, because they have been gifted a different freedom than one grasped through their own exploits. The Christian who does crazy service of others but doesn't make a big song and dance about it to others, or on social media. Do you know someone like that? It's probably because by the Spirit they're eagerly awaiting the hope that will be given, the righteousness that will be given to them. The Christian who admits that they're lonely or stressed or struggling, but you know, they don't create a constant pity pout about it. Why? Because by the Spirit of Jesus that they share by faith in him, they look forward to a righteousness to be revealed in our broken world. Let me conclude. Earlier this year, I visited a church while on holidays up the North Coast. I was chatting with a guy who had two complete knee replacements. I knew this. I asked him about it because I could see the operation scars. My mum has them, so I asked him. Knee replacement scars, by the way, look something like this. So it's pretty obvious. And I just said, was it worth it to go through all that? And he said, absolutely. No doubt about it. It was like it gave him his life back. Because, you know, before he could barely walk. He had such bad arthritis. The only problem was for him, he said, that for about 5 years after the operation, that's my wrap-up sign. For about 5 years after the operation, he could barely sleep at night because of the pain in his legs. Now, it wasn't from the old broken knees. They were replaced and perfect again. No, this was phantom pain. This was psychosomatic pain. He had to retrain his mind and nervous system over 5 years not to experience phantom pain. And it came at night because his knees, that's when he had arthritis, after a long day of pushing himself, when he'd lie down, that's when the pain was the most intense. So, even though he's got new knees, when he lies down in bed, what happens? Boom. Psychosomatic pain. So he had to train himself that his whole nervous system, that there was actually, he had new legs. See, after you become a Christian, the true you, the gifted you from Jesus, that must become the everyday you. The true you is a gift you've received from Jesus which can't be taken away. The everyday you is standing in that freedom, not being yoked to other measures of attainment. Let the new reality of who you are in Christ sink in. And don't go back to the enslavement of having to attain your own justification. Brianna's going to come up and we're going to pray.